I think it's our 14th now seminar. So, yeah, good to see some new faces. Good to see some old isn't really the word I like to use, but familiar faces. And a shorter seminar today, actually. SJP, unfortunately, had to pull out yesterday, but so we've got two speakers today. Got myself speaking about some company law considerations for accountants and business advisors, and Alan Harbour, a good friend of mine from Lloyds Bank, going to be speaking on routes to funding, alternative routes to funding for companies and businesses, which some of you might find useful. I know a lot of you are business owners here as well. Hello, Chris. And a lot of you are obviously advisors to small businesses, so I hope there's some use that you can get from all of this. I'll just give you a quick introduction as to who we are. We're So Legal. A lot of you probably know us. In fact, probably all of you know us. Law firm set up 3.5 years ago in Eastbourne. We've got 4 offices now. Due to have a 5th coming up soon, so all these need to be changed, but that'll come out in a couple of months. And yeah, we do everything apart from what I call emotional law, so don't do any family, crime, or children, or divorce, but we do everything else, particularly development, commercial property, corporate, commercial, litigation, big areas for us. So we have got a niche in that area. yesterday was a good milestone for us, actually. We opened up our 5,000, 5,000 client file. So it's a very big, monumental effort from the team. I'm really grateful for everyone that's been part of that journey. Such a cliched word, but it is actually what we are. I remember our first file, actually, that we opened. A client instructed me, and I opened the file on my own in my dining room, figuring out the systems, putting all the details in. And a week later, I chased him up for an update where we were. He said, "Oh, sorry, I found someone cheaper on elsewhere." And I picked up, because we were a paperless office, I picked up the laptop and I thought, "No, come on, calm down. It's okay, it'll get better." New introduction to the team, this clicker, which I'm delighted with, because previously I had to press the computer screen, so this is brilliant. Okay, so, right, I've done the introduction. Let's crack on. I'll go first and Anna's going to follow. So hopefully we'll be out and done by about 10:30, which will be good, and we'll get back to the office. So why is this seminar coming about? I work with a lot of accountants and business advisors, IFAs, and we get quite a lot of questions that come up time and again that are quite, I wouldn't say straightforward, but they're things that from a company perspective, accountants in particular, obviously you're not trained legally, often miss, and then we have to come back at a later date to either resolve or advise. Things that can actually be dealt with right at the start which of a company's life or when you get a new client that could really actually add value to what you're doing and put the client on a straight and narrow straight away. These are just a few tips that I've put together. I mean, this isn't rocket science, this isn't very complicated company stuff, but just things that I think that obviously people should consider. I've done the about us. So without further ado, what we're going to cover today is an overview of company law, the sources of company law, what we obviously consider when we take on clients for company law, shareholder agreements versus article association, what the difference is and why it's important, minority shareholder protection, how to avoid issues right at the start, board minutes and directors meetings, so these are important, why you have them, what needs to be in there, how it needs to be kept, board meetings and conflict issues, again, sometimes people can't vote on certain items for a company and this can cause problems, particularly if there's only 2 directors. And I'll get on to why that's important. Retaining dividends for future declaration and something that people always miss that's in the standard model articles that companies get given when they're incorporated. And voting at general meetings, hand or poll. So let's go on to the first slide, sources of company law. Company law is effectively derived from, sorry, gosh, so small this screen, isn't it? The budget here doesn't extend to this, I don't think. So it derives from the Companies Act 2006, which was the last Companies Act that came into play. Case law or company or common law, so what the courts decide and what comes in from the courts. The Insolvency Act 1986, very important for company law advisors, and some other acts, but they're not particularly relevant here. So why is this important for us to consider where the law is affecting a particular company? Any company that was incorporated after 2006 would not have what's known as a user provision or an objects clause. So an objects clause previously, if anyone dealt with previous older companies, it would say this company will only be able to sell widgets. And it would actually be in the memorandum of association. But the 2006 Act got rid of the requirement for memorandum of association, and also, of course, the objects clause. However, very importantly, and a lot this gets missed a lot, is that under the 2006 Act, Section 28, a company that was previously incorporated, their objects provision would be incorporated into the new company's articles. So, when you have a company that does something, for example, and I'll give the example of the widgets, this company can only buy or sell widgets, and they do something else apart from that. If it was an old company that had that user and objects provision, it's been incorporated into the new company, into the company post-2006. And the issue there is that if they do anything outside of that particular object, they're acting ultra vires. Now, why is that relevant? Ultra vires means acting outside of its powers. It's relevant because if the company does something, so for example, buys a property, but they're not entitled to buy a property, then anyone who is affected by that in the future can come back and ask the court to reverse that transaction because it was done ultra vires at the time. So it's very important when you have a company, new client comes in. This was my dad's company. We set it up in 1946, and it says General Building Company. But and it happens time and again, time and again. I've got a company at the moment we act for. It was the original company that bought the Wright Brothers rights to particular aircraft patents in the UK. So it's been going since 1911. And it started off as aircraft patents. All it does now is buys and sells property. So at that time, most companies, pre-2006, they would have an objects provision. One way of getting around that was to have a provision that said this company is a general company permitted by law to do general business, and it will be a broad objects provision. But actually, you'll find a lot of times companies previous to 2006 would have an objects provision that would be quite limited. So bear in mind that under Section 28, the Companies Act, the new law says that it's incorporated into the articles, so there's no more a memorandum of association. So the first question you need to ask is, can I have a look at your previous memorandum of association and your previous documents? Because we want to see whether everything you've done is actually within the powers of the company. So that's why looking at the sources of company law is important. And one thing that I would always advise accountants in particular to look at we get it all the time. Directors come in and go, I've got a brilliant idea, we're going to buy this. But actually, if the company's been going for a long time, they may not actually be able to, and that could cause problems in the future. So, shareholders' agreements. Shareholders' agreements are private contracts. I want to make a distinction here with article association. So shareholders' agreements are private contracts between shareholders. Shareholders can have anything in the agreement between them. Okay. The article association, however, are articles that are public documents. So there are two ways of making the internal structure of the company between directors and shareholders managed. One is either through article association, and that's a public document, and you can see exactly what the company's decided, and the other is for a shareholders agreement. Now, shareholders agreements are very flexible, so you can have in there, for example, special rights for appointing directors, provisions for adhering to business plans, dividend policies, provisions relating to share issues and transfers, restrictive covenants on shareholders that leave. So the important things that you would put in call options, so if a minority shareholder decides to leave, they have to sell to the majority shareholders. These are things that will always be in shareholders' agreements. Now, you can have those in article of association. But the distinction here, and the important tip that I want to give on this slide, is a shareholders' agreement can have any term between the shareholders. It can have literally anything, so long as the company is not a party to the agreement. This happens time and time again. We get a shareholders' agreement that's drafted by a third party that's not a solicitor, or actually a solicitor, and what they've done is they've made the company a party to the shareholders' agreement. And the reason they do that is because they want the company to be bound by the terms of the shareholders' agreement as well. However, the articles of association will always trump the shareholders' agreement. And it cannot, under Section 168, it cannot, for example, remove a director by ordinary resolution by less than 50%. But in the shareholders' agreement, you can. So I'll explain that. Sorry, I didn't really explain that very well. So basically, under company law, the article of association can never do anything that's a contravention of the Companies Act 2006. However, shareholders' agreement can do anything whatsoever. It can change, it can be this between the shareholders, a private arrangement. But if you have the company as a part of the shareholders' agreement, that provision will be a breach of the Companies Act, it will not be disapplied. So you need to be very careful. So the example that I'm giving you here is to remove a director under Section 168 of the Companies Act, you need over 50% of the shareholders to vote. Okay? You can lower that limit. You can extend that limit. You can make it higher. However, if the company is a party to the Act, it can't be in a shareholders agreement because it can only be over 50%. So if you make it 30%, if the company's a part of shareholders agreement, that provision is void. So you have to bear in mind that shareholders agreements are very valuable documents. Article of Association are the internal documents that run the company and how it's all run. But they can't be in contravention of the Companies Act. The shareholders agreement can, only if the company's not a party to the shareholders agreement. If anyone's got any questions on that later, this is quite a complicated area, but I'm happy to discuss that because this is one that we see time and again that can really cause you some problems. So, Article of Association. So I'll just explain what they are. They're public documents and they have to be filed at a company's house. What happens when you incorporate a company, and every accountant knows this, you incorporate a company and what you get is model articles. And the model articles, they used to be known and commonly known now still as Table A articles. So they're model articles the companies has put together, and these articles set out what the company can and can't do internally, because otherwise, if anyone wants to... is that yours, Jonathan? All right, okay, that's good. I've turned it off. So... the Article of Association are registered at a company's house and they're visible by anyone to see. So it's the internal documents that run the structure of the company, how dividends are paid, etc. So again, like a shareholders agreement, will cover the majority of the items. When you incorporate a company, you get model Table A articles. So any company anyone here has, if you haven't changed your articles, you have got the standard Table A articles. Why is that relevant? It's because it doesn't always cover a lot of the items that directors and shareholders between them would want to actually have, particularly if there's two of you and you're on a 50-50 basis. It doesn't cover a lot of the items. So you really do need to consider whether the Table A articles are actually sufficient for you. So top tip three here, and I said this previously and I'll reinforce it, you cannot have a provision of the articles which would not comply with the Companies Act 2006. So that's why a shareholders agreement will always be a better option if you want to have things that are different to what company law prescribes, like the 50% for a share for removing a director. So you really do need to look at the articles and the shareholders as two distinct documents. One that's going to be public, okay, and does it fit the purposes of what you need, and the other which is going to be private between you. This is really relevant when there's more than two of you as a shareholder or a director, especially if you go into 3, 4, 5 shareholders and directors. That's when you really do need to consider the whole holistic look at how the articles work and how the shareholders agreement works. So, further issue that we get time and again, and this is one where we get a lot of questions on, and that is, Hamid, I've got a guy who set up a company in a pub with a friend. There's three of them. One guy hasn't really done a lot, but they gave him 10% because he was their best pal from school. The company's done really well, and he's digging his heels in. He wants a payout to leave. Okay, do they have a shareholders agreement? No, no shareholders agreement. Okay, did anything get put in the articles in respect to this at the start? No, nothing got put in the articles in respect to this. So what, this guy's got no obligation to sell his shares, and they've got no right to buy his shares, and he's got 10%, and he's digging his heels in. They want him out, and he's not doing anything. Yeah, pretty much. Okay, well, they're a bit screwed there. that happens time and time again because people haven't thought about the implications of having somebody there who isn't there primarily, I would say, to contribute to the company, but it might just be their mate or someone's dad. I've got a situation that's come up now just recently where someone actually did make their dad a shareholder just because they like their dad and dad was always there for them. But dad's now being a royal pain in the arse and he won't leave, and the company wants to expand and he wants to have input, but they don't want that input. So just a quick run through how, in the reverse flip of that, how can a minority shareholder protect their interests? So on the one hand, you've got the majority people trying to get rid of a minority person. That's the only way that's going to happen is a court order at the end of the day, if you don't have anything in your articles or shareholders agreement. But from the flip side, a minority shareholder, how can they protect their interests? So you are that 10%, you actually do contribute a lot, and you don't want to leave, and they're not really helping you out. So there's only four ways that you can do this, and this, I only bring this up so you can see what a royal pain in the backside it is with minority shareholders if it's not thought through at the start and put in the articles and shareholders agreement. So four ways that they can protect their interests. One, shareholders agreement of articles, that I've said already. Two, this is the old rule in a case called Foss v. Harbottle, which all the litigators here will know, and that is the company brings a claim, this is brilliant, against the company itself for being unfairly treated. So the minority shareholder convinces the company, and that's all the other majority shareholders, to bring a claim against the company itself for unfairly treating him or her. Can be done by a liquidator sometimes, but you can see the difficulty there, can't you? You're the Mr. 10%, and you're asking the company to bring a claim against the company for unfairly treating you. It's not going to happen. It's very rare. Under the Companies Act 2006, they changed that. They changed it by Section 260 to a statutory derivative claim, which means that any member, and that's any shareholder, can now bring a claim on a company's behalf. But the rule here and the law says that the company itself is actually the beneficiary of the claim. So, again, as a minority shareholder, you're not even a beneficiary of any claim. It's the company, and this usually results in the court saying that the minority shareholder needs to be bought out by the others and then sets the price. And then four, this is under Section 994 and 996 of the Companies Act, unfair prejudice claim. And that is a minority shareholder brings a claim if the company's affairs, for example, are conducted in a manner which is unfairly prejudicial. So, for example, if a majority shareholder just floods the board with all his mates to make sure this guy's vote is completely worthless, or pays himself or herself a huge salary so there's no dividend to pay to any of the shareholders. It happens all the time. So you can see what a pain in the backside that is if you haven't thought about how to protect or how to get rid of minority shareholders at the start. So those four issues, that's, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of pounds potentially in legal costs to get to the bottom of that. So top tip four, do not leave this to the three ways of sorting out as above. Have the minority buyout incorporated at the start in the articles of the shareholders agreement. So what do? You put in provisions in the articles that say that if a call option, that I am the majority shareholder and I call at any one time, I have the option to buy your shares at a price. And the pricing mechanism can actually be dealt with in the articles and the shareholders agreement, either at market value, either an expert value, however, but it actually deals with that problem. If you don't do that, you're left with the other four options and the court issues and the resulting problems of actually not being able to get rid of a minority shareholder. So it's very important, this, and it's one area that we get time and time again. And it's great for us, we make a huge amount of money from minority shareholder and unfair prejudice claims, but you know, we do feel that this can be avoided at the start. Right, so moving on. Board minutes and directors' minutes. I'm going to ask a quick question here without anyone else. Does anyone here think, yes or no, put your hands up, can you have a board meeting over the phone?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. So yes. I'll explain why now. So what I said to you earlier about Table A model articles, they are the standard model articles that every company gets when they're incorporated. Read them. They're not that long. They're only about 7-8 pages, but you know, it's worth a read actually if you're a business advisor. So they govern things such as appointing a chairperson is done by directors by unanimity at the start. Article 13, chairperson has a casting vote. So if there's four of you and it's 2v2, that person you appoint as a chairperson under the articles has the casting vote. Article 11.2, a quorum of a company more than two directors is fixed at two. Well, you need to disapply that, because otherwise if there's two of you and one of them's not there, then you're never going to get anywhere, are you? So you need to think about and read your articles. So top tip five, can I have a board meeting not face-to-face on the phone? Simple answer is yes, as some of you said. Provided the company gives notice in Article 9, then Article 10.2 says it is irrelevant where any director is or how they communicate to each other. So this section on board meetings, directors' meetings, I really urge you to read in the model articles. So Article 10.3 then says the meeting can be stated to have been convened where any one of them are. So if there's five directors and they're all on holiday, you can do it over the phone on a conference call. You can do it over WhatsApp now with linking everybody in. And all you need to put is that was where one of them was. So if one of them was in Barbados, the board meeting took place in Barbados. And the other four were all on the phone. So therefore, why is that important? Because we get time and time again, we get a question going, oh, one director's been so slippery, he's never there, he won't be involved, I'm not sure whether the meetings are being convened properly, etc. Well, actually, that slippery guy, you can get him on the phone. They can't just run now. You can say, well, actually, you can do it over the phone. We can do it with a quorum of one because we've disapplied, or a smaller quorum because we've disapplied certain articles. So it's important to understand this area. Again, it's a really big area in the city. I don't have enough time to go into it in great detail, but it's an area where you can really add value to your clients by getting the board meetings right, getting the board minutes right, making sure that the quorum's set properly, making sure that the place where the meeting took place is set out properly, and that you document everything. And the reason documentation is important is because you have to keep the board minutes for a period, the board meeting, sorry, and notes of them for a period of 10 years. So you do need to have these for every decision the board makes. So moving on, conflicts of interest. There are two types of conflict of interest when it comes to directors. There are ones where the director specifically takes away an opportunity from the company for their own benefit. We're not talking about those conflict of interest here. Those conflict of interest are governed by the Companies Act, Section 177 and onwards. So for example, if let's say there was an opportunity to buy a product, knowing that selling the product on would be a huge profit, and the director decided that opportunity, even though it comes to the company, he would do it personally or through another company, he would be breaching the conflict of interest provisions of the Companies Act. The conflicts I'm talking about here are conflicts, and they happen day in, day out, where a director is involved in a transaction that involves the company. So for example, this happens a lot. You have clients that have pension trusts, SIPs and SASs, and they buy the building that the company resides in. They're going to grant a lease to the company. That is a conflict of interest under the articles. That needs to be governed properly because you need to have proper board minutes and you need to have all the quorum and everything else dealt with. So why is that particularly relevant? It's because if you have two directors, this happens time and time again, if you have two directors, you need a quorum of two. So you need two of them to vote on this matter. Yet one of them owns the building in their pension trust that they want to lease to the company. That person can't vote. So under Article 14, Model Article 14, that person can't vote. So therefore you can't pass the board meeting. You can't pass the minutes because it needs majority. It needs them both to vote on it. So how do you get around that? At the start of the company's life, you need to look at the model articles, you need to sit down with a solicitor, or you need to have a checklist, you need to say to the client, look, there's only two of you, is this situation ever going to come up? Yeah, actually, we own the yard that we're renting to the company. Well, actually, John does, and he's renting it to the company, and we're going to, okay, well, what do you need to do? If you don't do what I'm going to suggest, you need to do it takes a long time, and it's a very complicated process. First thing to do, disapply Model Article 14 on incorporation. Just have a resolution, disapply Model Article 14, this will never be an issue. If you don't do that, then you have to do what's known as a board meeting sandwich, which is a board meeting, general meeting, board meeting. It's a headache because a general meeting requires 14 clear days notice, or not less than 90% of shareholders agree to a lesser notice. So why is that relevant? So if you've got Model Article 14, we need to pass a board resolution and document the minutes that we're going to lease the property off Chris, who's one of the directors. Oh, but there's only two of us, and Model Article 14 says that he can't vote. Okay, so postpone the board meeting, declare a general meeting to disapply Model Article 14, put the resolutions into company's house, wait the 14 days, and then have another board meeting to pass that. So you can see the timing is very critical, especially if something needs to be done very quickly. So it's very important to note that some of the articles will not apply to your clients on incorporation. And I have a checklist for smaller businesses, which I can send to people, which will ask you questions such as, are they going to be dealing with properties and issues that they have themselves? If so, disapply one of Article 14. So, a couple of additional points here. NB, so every company must make minutes of all board meetings and they must be kept for 10 years. They can also be kept electronically as PDFs, so don't have to have a paper copy, so remember that. To not keep it under Section 2483 is a criminal offence, subject to summary conviction and a fine at level 3 plus daily default. I don't know what level 3 fine is, to be honest with you, but there is apparently a fine. NB2, conflicts of interest must always be declared at the start of all your board minutes. So under Section 175, what you need to do at the start of all your board minutes is say, the chairperson asked anyone with a conflict of interest to declare their interest under Section 175, and Peter Tuffin said that he had a conflict of interest because of XYZ. So it has to be in there. So NB3, so you might be thinking, what if there's only a one director company? So there are, obviously under the Companies Act 2006, you can have companies now with just one director. Well, actually, very cleverly, what they did was they added Article 7.3, which says none of the above applies if there's only one director. So that's a really handy point there as well. So if you have one director, don't worry. None of these issues apply. We just had a case where we had to explain that to a client. So, but if you have more than one, all the above is a pain in the backside, and you want to avoid that as early as possible. So do think about, what are we doing here? Do we want to be able to have board meetings over the phone? Sometimes you don't want to. Disapply that article. Do we want to have conflict of interest retained if there is two directors? No, because it's going to be a pain in the backside to go for that board meeting sandwich and general meeting sandwich. Disapply that article. So you need to look through each one and say, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? And that checklist is very important in that sense. So, moving on. This is an interesting one for anyone that deals with preference shares or people who have got very successful companies and they don't necessarily take their dividends. So what situation are we talking about here? So Article 33 of the Model Articles must be disapplied if you have a company where the shareholders do not take the dividend that they are entitled to take. So you have situations where a company is very successful and the shareholder says, I only want X a year sent to me, the rest of it keep in there. Or preference shares. Now, preference shares are, in a nutshell, shares where you are guaranteed a dividend. Okay, so let's say there's 10 preference shares to previous directors reserved to one side. They're guaranteed, if there's a distributable dividend, they're guaranteed a payment. Now, some of them might not be contactable, some of them might not have bank details, some of them may not just take the money, but they just keep it in the company bank account. Why is that relevant? Because Model Article 33 says, all dividends or other sums which are payable in respect of shares and unclaimed after having been declared or become payable may be invested or otherwise made use by the directors for the benefit of the company until claimed. So it's very important to note that's company money until it's claimed by the person that's got the right to the dividend. Two, company does not become a trustee of undeclared or paid dividends. So it's not a trustee, it's not held on trust by the company. And most importantly here, three, if 12 years have passed from the date in which a dividend or other sum became due for payment, and the distribution recipient, so the person entitled to that payment, has not claimed it, the distribution recipient is no longer entitled to that dividend or other sum, and it ceases to remain owing by the company. So think about that. You've got a company that's incredibly successful. The shareholders may not take their dividend, either preference shares, or it might be a declarable dividend, but they've not taken it. If after 12 years they've not taken that, and this happens a lot because you have companies where people retire young, it's done well, people take over the business, and they just wander off. If they've not taken that money from the company in 12 years, the company must disapply it as a dividend, so they've lost the money. So, for example, at So Legal, we've disapplied this article. Because for us, this would be, if let's say, for example, we did do extremely well, or I wanted to keep some preference shares, or Jamie did, or Hamer, whoever did, We don't want a situation where the people taking over the company, they might not be aligned to what we did when we first set up, turn around and say, sorry, you didn't take the dividend, it's no longer yours, it's the company's money. So this is very important. So top tip 7, if you have a company where a shareholder retains dividends in the company for, let's say, future retirement payments, this apply model Article 33. Some people do this for cash flow purposes. So preference shares are a big one on this. Right. Any questions on that? Yeah, I'll ask some questions later if you, well, you can do later if you want to. Right, so voting at board meetings or shareholders meetings. Who thinks it's a show of hands and who thinks it's a poll? The starting point under law.
Show of hands if you're meeting.
It is show of hands, yeah. So if you're on a board, it doesn't matter the shareholding you have, it is a show of hands. Five of you, three. But some of the majority shareholder may not like that if this decision goes against what they want. So the starting point is always a show of hands. So why is this relevant? So if you have a majority shareholder over 50%, they may not want to rock the boat with the other shareholders and the other directors by having them effectively throw their weight around. So they may be happy with a show of hands to start with. However, if the decision doesn't go their way, they may not be happy with that decision. They might want to change that, so they can then ask for a poll vote. But importantly, if you have four directors and they've got completely different shareholding, and one of them, let's say, has 80%, in a board meeting, three of those directors need to vote to pass any resolution. If you think about that, because it needs to be majority. So three out of four, he might have 80%, he might lose with his 20%. So why is this relevant? Well, model Article 41, the resolution put to the vote of a general meeting must be decided in a show of hands unless a poll is duly demanded in accordance with the articles. So if you're a majority shareholder, or you have a client who's a majority shareholder, and you're going to be calling a meeting, make sure you ask them, do you want a show of hands or do you want a poll vote in terms of the general meeting or any board meetings? Either disapply that model article and or change it, because they may be unfairly prejudiced. So top tip 8, do not assume the voting is based on a poll. You must specify when drafting a notice for the general meeting and explain why it's based on a poll if you don't want a show of hands. The top tip is to ask your clients at the start, how do you want to vote, and then disapply model article 42 and redraft the articles. This can cause huge problems for companies because people fall out over stuff like this, particularly with what I came back to earlier, which was the minority shareholders and them feeling unfairly prejudiced because the majority shareholders throwing their weight around. The key to making companies run smoothly, in my opinion and my experience, is to make sure that all of these issues are ironed out at the start. Because once issues come up and you try to resolve them legally, it becomes a he said, she said, or it becomes an ego contest. And that's not what you want. If this is all resolved at the start, you don't have friction. So model article 44 does allow a shareholder to demand a poll. So a shareholder can go, actually, I'm not happy with that decision, I want a poll, and then call another general meeting on a vote based on the shares. But how much friction is that going to cause after the first vote's gone through? So you need to really consider what you're doing with your articles and obviously where it's going. So that's it for this morning. I just want to just wrap up what we're talking about here. So in essence, we've gone through articles of association, what they are, okay, internal documents that are public facing. Anyone can read them. You can go on Companies House and read any articles of any company that's involved here. Shareholders agreements, which are private agreements that can have anything in them. Okay, so you need to consider, don't have the company a party. You can change voting methods, you can change how many shares need to vote for what. So shareholders agreements can be very useful in that sense. We've then gone through sources of company law. We've talked about making sure that your company's objects clause is disapplied, or if it's too constricted, it's basically changed or modified. After 2006, there's no need for an objects clause. We've looked at board meetings, board resolutions. Can they be done on the phone? Yes. So can the director who's running away and saying, I'm not getting involved, can he be? Yes, he can. So do it over the phone. What if they're all away? Doesn't matter. You can still have that meeting. We then looked at conflict of interest to make sure you disapply if there's only two directors and are dealing with the company. It happens all the time. You have people that have other outside interests that are dealing with the company that they're a director of. So you need to look at, do you want to disapply that model article in respect of them not being able to vote? Otherwise, you might never ever be able to get anything voted through. We've looked at, obviously, the show of hands or voting by poll. Why disapplying it at the start will cause less friction in the future, or are you all pals at the start and you're happy to have a show of hands, and then Mr. 5% in your company is constantly voting against you just to wind you up? That happens time and again as well. So I think we've covered a good amount of issues here. I'm happy to take any questions now or come and speak to me at the end. But that's our top 7 tips for business advisors and accountants on basic company law. So thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions? I know you will later. Yeah.
I just want to have it. If you've got a director of a meeting who's not available, so it's been done by phone, the director would have to be present on the phone during the whole of the meeting from start to finish to be able to put a vote in, I guess?
Yes, well, they have to be there. I mean, whether they've nipped off to the loo while they're on speakerphone and you don't know, you're never going to know, are you? But yeah, I mean, technically they have to be there for the whole of the meeting.
So you could obviously call them up to get a decision, a casting vote on something.
Well, interestingly, let's say if they were the reason for the conflict, they couldn't be in that. They couldn't actually be in the board meeting for that one vote on the conflict issue.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they were away and you needed to have a board meeting that covered several resolutions, including one that had that conflict, that couldn't be part of that vote. Do you get that?
You put the phone down.
Well, no, it'd just be like, well, you're not part of the vote. You go and do what you want for 2 minutes while we all decide, and then come back and go, right, that's done. Now let's move on to the next one. So, yeah, technically, they would need to be there for the whole of the meeting.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Gareth?
You said at the start, it's easier to sort these things out at the start before you get to a conflict. How easy is it to change the articles before you get to a conflict, but now it's a few years down the line?
Well, you need a special resolution to change the articles, which is 75% or more of the shareholders voting. The articles then need to be submitted to Companies House, need to be drafted by a solicitor. You can do it two ways. One is you have a deed of variation, I guess, in a property transaction where you say, model article 14 is now replaced with this, so you don't go through the whole, setting out a whole new range of articles, or you can actually just redraft the whole lot again, incorporating the ones that you want from model articles, but adding the ones that you feel are more relevant, and say, our articles are now replaced by this. The best way to do it is right at the start, because otherwise you're gonna have huge issues. Or another way of doing it, let's say you have a company where it's 50-50 and they're bringing in a new shareholder, use that as an opportunity at that time to then amend your articles, especially if that person's going to be a minority, because that's when you're going to have the only opportunity to do that. Because asking someone, it's an obvious business point, isn't it? But asking someone at a later date, oh, by the way, we found something that's prejudicial to you, but it's in our interest, can you sign this? They're never going to sign that, are they? But at the start, before you give them the shares and before they've joined the company, if you say, by the way, one of the conditions on you joining is that you enter into this, or and this is the reason why, they then can make a commercial decision. If they're not happy about that, they can say, well, I'm not happy, I don't want to join. But if they're desperate to join, they can say, well, okay, I accept that, that's fine, I'll sign it. So that's the reason. I would always say do it right at the start. Have a checklist with your clients and have a... today's it's difficult, this seminar, because you could go on forever in respect to company law. There's so many issues. But have a checklist of your top 10 showstoppers. Now, guys, these are the things that we consider that you need to discuss with a solicitor. I mean, this is pitching for work, I guess, isn't it? But you guys can turn around and go to so people, they've got this checklist, they'll have a good half hour with you to discuss why these points are relevant, and then they'll maybe draft bespoke articles for you right at the incorporation stage. So when you incorporate the company, you then put a special resolution in for the new articles as well, or the amended articles straight in. So there's no dispute then. Shareholders' agreements are vital as well. They really are. I mean, you see companies time and again, and we would be out of business, I guess, a lot of time in litigation and corporate if we didn't have people that just blindly entered into contractual relationships with each other. Because think about what this is. This is a contract at the end of the day. The article association, a contract of how you are running your business internally between all of you directors and the shareholders. So would you just take a contract on face value without looking at it? Would you sign a contract for anything without looking at it? But this could actually be your livelihood and your business. So, yeah, I would say right at the start, or if someone new is joining, make sure that you make it a condition. Anything else? Good. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to introduce Alan Harbour. He is the head honcho locally at Lloyd's and a good friend of mine. I'm really grateful he's come here today to obviously give us a talk about alternative funding routes for companies. Quite interesting ones as well, actually, from what we were having a chat earlier. Also, I'd like to thank Lloyds for giving Jurgen Klopp another job. I keep looking at that sign. Well, I didn't realise Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool's manager is also working at Lloyds as a surveyor. But, yeah. So, Alan, yeah, please, off to you.
Cheers. Thanks very much. No worries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down to the next slide.
Brilliant.
Yours. Nothing like really I'll stick in my pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll get rid of that. No problem. There we go. Well, I'm clean, which is good news. My name's Alan Harbour. I'm the area director, as it says up there, for Sussex. So cover East and West Sussex for Lloyd's commercial banking. So I'm not going to try and get too hung up on what sector we deal with and what we don't deal with. I think the key is we deal with it. So whatever the business turnover of you or any of the companies that you may well be associated with, we will have a facility that will be able to support that company. So from really small businesses right the way up through. So didn't want to get too caught up there. When Harmony kindly offered me the opportunity to come and speak to you all and ask, you know, what are you going to talk about? I thought we'd just begin with funding, but I didn't want to get too caught up there because people quite often just associate a bank with coming to get some funds. So you may well bank elsewhere, which is completely fine. That is your choice. That's the beauty of this great nation. But what hopefully I might be able to do is just explain a few things. You should just check in with your current banking arrangements to make sure that you're getting those. And obviously, if you're not, we'd love to talk to you. Joined in the room today, I've got a couple of colleagues of mine that work alongside me. So I've got Colin Grant, who's a local banking manager. Colin's just over here. So if after this you've got any general banking questions, he's your man. And if it's more property related, I've got Elliot Brown. So he looks after anything to do with property investment and property development, and I'm going to touch on his specialism just there. So before we get wound into debt, which is one side of the balance sheet, obviously you've got deposit funds as well. I guess this is one of the things that I see day after day, is that businesses will hold their funds and say, we'll have a conversation with them around, so what do you do with your deposit, and tell me about what's your strategy, you know, what kind of funds do you need, a 0 to 1 day, you know, have you got a 30-day plan, have you got a 90-day plan? And they go, yeah, I've got some money and it's in this account over here. And what's your interest rate? There's kind of a bit more to it, and there's a bit more finesse, and I'm not going to be able to touch on that today just because of time. But again, if you'd like a bit more information, we've got a fantastic tool publicly available, which will run you through various options and work out whether your money's working right for you. 30-day notice accounts, maybe a 3-month, 6-month, 12-month, what the rotation is, and it'll work it all out for you and show you what your cash management position is on any given day. And whilst that's not the most exciting subject to go through, it is one of those things that I'm just at pains to point out to people. You really should have a plan for that. So more than happy to run through that with anyone. So, having presented in this room before and knowing that the budget still is somewhat tight, that we've got Hamid's bedroom TV in this one. There's no death by PowerPoint, I'm really pleased to say. So that's it. So it doesn't look like the greatest presentation, but hey, let's see where it goes. The reason I've got security there in the middle, that will be the key driver for you. So if you're looking to borrow money as a business, normally there's two things. One, what's the security you're prepared to give? So what collateral have you got? Is there anything in the business? We then start talking about personal homes. What's the lending value in that? And the other part will be the repayment method. So that will be a case of looking at the accounts and seeing what cash is available for debt servicing within those accounts. But there are other options. So quite often people will come to us and just say, I need to borrow some money. And then we'll have a chat through what the reason is. And funny enough, as you might well expect, each one of those reasons is slightly different. But quite often the solution is exactly the same, which is surely I'll just do a term loan. So right at the bottom of that screen there is term debt. Stereotypically, that should be offered up to a 25-year tenure possible. It can be for a variety of cases. Could be an MBO, could be a change of premises, could be cash flow. We'll lend for a number of set criteria. So we've got healthcare specialists that work alongside me within my team. So that could be dental, pharmacy. We can lend against scripts. We can lend against a number of GP practices, whatever that could look like. Just done a loan on a fishing boat. So using fishing quotas and fishing licenses in order to support. So don't just think that cash is the only way of showing repayment. It could well be through a different instrument that allows us to term that one out. You're probably interest rate wise and all of these, you could do, I mean, right now that's a $1 million question in terms of what's going on with interest rates. We were covering that yesterday, and again, I was going to go through interest rate management today because you could fill an hour on that really, really quickly. You may lose a few people, but we can fill an hour on interest rate management and what's going on in the market right now. If you've got any foresight into the market, over the last day, the charts have just gone crazy. And I haven't checked this morning, but I can pretty much guarantee they're going crazy right now in terms of where we see our position and what's happening. All of that will make an impact on what fixed rate, what variable rate, you may go for a catch rate, or another highly underplayed moment is you can do a mixture of both. So you could do part of your loan fixed, you could do part of it variable. A lot of people do, and again, we'll provide you with the information that you may need in order to be able to reach an informed decision on that one. So moving swiftly on from term debt, another really great way of looking at it is asset funding. Might be known as HP to a number of you. We have an in-house ability of creating those. It's a quick way to money. We can set up a facility for you so you can draw down from it. So we may give you a limit that you can go up to for your business or your client. So if they need to purchase equipment on a regular basis, this is a really good way of doing it. And having a preset limit means you don't have to go out, look at said piece of machinery, and then come back and see if you've got the funding. In effect, we'll agree it in principle up front for you, so you can draw down against that. The good news is the security used will stereotypically be the asset, so it allows you to retain that security value for the term debt. So that's another really popular way of doing it. We'll do a VAT bridge for you, so if the machine is, or the a piece of equipment is VAT-able, to allow you time to reclaim that VAT back, we'll actually fund out the VAT for you as well, which is another quite useful one. Sorts of things, obviously anything with wheels is generally quite good news with HP, but don't get caught in that trap. Machinery, dental chairs, good grief. I can't think of anything that we haven't had someone come and talk to us about and saying, can you do HP on that? 9 times out of 10, the answer will be yes. The key bit is it needs to be recoverable and fixed. So by fixed, I mean fixed within the UK. So helicopters generally are not a great place to be because they have that ability of disappearing fairly quickly. Serial numbers are tricky, and trackers. There are specialist brokers out there that will do that for any helicopter enthusiasts out there, but do just keep that one there. So again, HP, really good. low deposit, fixed monthly payments, stereotypically, good interest rates on those, and again, you're not using the security that you may well have given up to achieve the term debt. Now, one that I think more and more people are aware of right now is property development and property investment. I'm going to touch on this briefly, but again, afterwards, Elliot is right here. He loves the property question more than life itself. See if you can catch him out. It's generally quite good fun. Sadly, he does tend to know the answer. But just really quickly, so our property development proposal within Lloyds, the amount of clients I go out and meet, so you may well have a property development interest alongside your business. We go out, we talk to the client, and nine times out of ten, we hear those words of, "Well, we didn't know Lloyds were into property development." And as we kind of just mop our brow and think, "Here we go again," I just wanted this opportunity of just sharing it with you. We're very much into property development. We've got some really good proposal, but bringing it together really briefly, 65% of costs is what we'll do, and that's all costs. The only cost we won't do is estate agency fees, because they're seen as a post cost on the build, i.e. you know, hopefully it's finished and you know you should be able to bear those costs in our own interest. Our interest is collected monthly on that loan. But of those costs, you might have solicitor's fees, finder's fees, you could have any of the fees associated with the planning application, right down to the actual build itself. So it's 65% of all costs that you'll incur in creating that property development. In terms of lower and upper limits, give us that challenge. Our upper limit within our own segment is around about 8 million in terms of single point property development, but it's worth having a conversation with us if you've got something going that's outside of that. We'll do tranche drawdowns on that, so you'll take the money as and when you want as we go through. Some of that may be surveyor monitored, some of that can be monitored by us, it just depends on the type of debt that we're looking at. It's 12 to 36 months repayment profile, so again, when you're going around and you're looking, and there was a great question raised yesterday about why are interest rates and, you know, aren't all banks the same? Absolutely not. Not all lenders are the same on this one. So if the development's going to take 18 months, we may agree with you up front that we'll do this funding for 2 years or 2.5 years. Why would we do that? It'll give you time to get back out of the development, whilst I'm sure it will sell on day one and everyone, there'll be a large queue up. Just in case that queue doesn't form, we will give you the ability of not having to force into a stress sale and start discounting your goods in order to get out of it to repay the bank. The other key point here is there's no exit fees either on this one. So currently we've got no exit fees. Again, when you're checking with this lender that may look at a better rate, just check that there's no exit fees on that one, and that they'll also give you that flexibility. On property investment, HMOs, flats, commercial, resi, you name it, we, again, really keen on looking at those. We haven't got too many outside. Our USP on this one is our PAL product, so that's a partially amortising loan. Now, again, Elliot explained this far more eloquently than me, and I purposely haven't done his slide. What we're really looking at there is up to a 30-year repayment profile, but with a 5-year bullet. So in effect, the term will be 30 years, so that'll be how long we'll stretch that loan out over, but it'll be on a 5-year repayment profile. So what that helps you do is bring down the cost of that fund. What's in it for us? Well, we've got a lower commitment in terms of time commitment, and you'll find the interest rate is somewhat more favourable. Tends to be it's probably really low threes, could be late twos, just depends where we are, what the loan is, over what period, etc., etc. But that PAL product, in particular on investment, is absolutely one that you should explore before committing yourself to any other lending. Some of our competitors might look for a revaluation of property, in particular property investment, during the term of the loan. That's not something that we entertain on most. Obviously, there'll be extremes, but it's very unlikely that we'll want a revaluation.
So, do you do interest only on development or HMOs?
So, on development, property development's interest
HMOs,
only.
HMOs, investments.
Not investment, that'll be on a repayment process. But that's where this PAL product's worth a look. Because of the tenure and the term that it runs over, actually it's a really competitive market out there, a really competitive product for you. So definitely one to pick up with Elliot over a cup of tea. So moving on through vehicle fleet, so a lot of people don't see our fleet as a great way of raising funds. So we work with a partner called Lex Auto Lease, one of the biggest in the UK. So the sorts of things we can do there is if you've got a fleet that you own, a fleet of vehicles, we can actually purchase that fleet back and put it into a vehicle leasing arrangement. Now check, obviously, with accountants out there, but that could well take it off balance sheet and be an advantageous tax position. It's not for everyone, it's not for, you know, I'm not saying you should do it every single time, but it's one of those things that's worth going around the loop and just having a quick look. The other bit around your vehicle fleet is the liability you've got. Now, I'm sure Hamid will be able to give you a far better update on that, but you do have a number of obligations. If you're supplying a vehicle to a colleague that's working for you, you've got service issues in terms of if they have an accident in any way, shape and form, you will need to provide what the service schedule is and what you did to protect them and how that worked. We'll do vehicle management. We can go from fleets from one or two right up to a couple of hundred, 300, 400, 500, you name it, we can provide it. But that fleet management's really good. With the onset of the environmental challenge that we've all got out there, we also work with a company called Drive Electric. They'll go through how that works for you as a business and whether it's the right decision for you, and we provide that consultancy basis. So we can run through your fleet and look to see whether now is a good time for you to consider the electric alternative and how that would work for you, any cost benefits. That's another really good one to just consider. So again, you're not using any of your own capital in terms of giving up security on those, because security 9 times out of 10 will be taken against the vehicle that will be supplied. And again, it will be on a rental basis. So again, that can push money back in. So your vehicle fleet is one to consider. Card services might not look like an obvious one to be able to raise funds. So if you have card terminals, so you may take payment within a business, or one of your clients may take payment via cards in the business, we offer next day settlement on that card balance. So we're one of the only people in the market to do that. So as long as it's in before 6 o'clock in the evening, following morning, money's released, which can help your working capital management cycle massively. Depends how heavy use that client is on it, but do just keep it in mind in the back of your head. That could be a great way, because the industry average is 3 days, 4 days, and we'll do next day. The next day charge, quite often people will go, yeah, that sounds really expensive. It's 21p a day, that's it. It's not 21p per thousand, it's not 21 pence on a certain amount, it's 21 pence per day. If you're a non-client of Lloyd's, it's 81 pence. We also provide, there's a number of on-charges with card terminal machines that you may have some compliance charges. We'll work through those with you and show you how actually you can completely mitigate that cost. And we'll show you how to be compliant in it. It's only because some companies don't quite see the value in it that you'll see that £15 or £20 charge for compliance or non-compliance. One thing I couldn't just do, and it's slightly off topic, but I just wanted to just cover this, is our international offering. We've got something called an international trade portal, ITP. Please do have a chat with Colin, Elliot, myself, someone. If you're a non-Lloyd's customer, you can have that. If you're trading internationally, it's an absolutely cracking bit of kit. Again, a bit more time, I'd happily do a demo, perhaps it's one for another day. But it really does bring alive, just if you're importing or exporting, if it's beer bottles and you're wondering who's a producer of them and what custom forms do I need, I've got your attention with beer bottles. But it will run that one through, and it will show you actually what custom forms you need, what the import looks like, what the export looks like, who the top producers are. It's got their telephone numbers, it's got what trade shows are there, the whole thing, and it's really, really simple. It's an absolutely cracking piece of kit, but only if you're doing anything internationally. If you're not, I wouldn't suggest it's a time stealer. And then finally, looking at working capital on the bottom left there. So this is just a bit of an open question, so no need to answer, but quite a lot of small businesses or businesses generally seem to act as the bank manager. So if we assume that maybe we're the only bank in the room right now, but why would a business want to operate as a bank? Because when you give any terms on an invoice, in effect, you're straight away operating as a bank. So you're giving a loan, maybe against a goods or a service or a contract, and you might well give payment terms of 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, on or before, whatever it is, but that's putting you at stress. Quite often you haven't completed a number of checks. You may well have run them through a credit check, but you don't know what their financial system is, what their back office payment system's like, have they got any liabilities, and where do you stand? And this is one, quite often you hear people say, oh, I got knocked on an invoice, I didn't get paid on that one, this one didn't happen. Now, depending what kind of debtor book you've got, and actually we're really strong on this one, invoice finance is a really great way of going. It's not for everyone. It's one of those ones that people that haven't experienced it in the last 12 to 24 months will tell you it's a really expensive way of raising funds. So if you talk to your mate in the pub, if that's where you get your best advice, they'll tell you it isn't the way to go. I would just say, just find out about it before you make that cost. It has, this product's fundamentally changed over the last couple of years. And I'm really proud to say that we at Lloyds hold it very dear to our heart and actually provide that solution to a number of clients. Again, that security part's really key on this one. There's no, stereotypically, we won't use your security. So again, it allows you to generate term debt should you need to from the company. It can be set up in weeks. Payment can be within 24 hours. So you'll input the payment onto a system and it will be paid the following day, depending on what your needs are. The limit will flex as you grow. So unlike an overdraft that will have a fixed limit, £50,000, whatever it could be, this can be flexed during the product term. The funding isn't limited by your ability to service the debt, which is a real key one. And the funds can be used for relatively any purpose. So one that I've recently supported a client with was actually to help them purchase a company, so it wouldn't always be seen as the right way to go, but actually the company, the target purchase, had a really strong debtor book, had some great clients on that book, and we were able to raise funds against that. And through a short-term financial, so we're talking just for a few hours, to allow the purchase to happen, we were able to set it all up in advance and take the charge over and release the capital straight in to allow the business purchase to happen. That might not always be the way that you'd look to do it, but it absolutely worked really well for this client, allowed them to not use that security, any of their own value, in order to purchase. Time period for the first 6 months on this product is 28 days, which again, currently is market leading. After 6 months, it's a 3 month notice period. Again, in the market, they're really, really low. We can release up to 90% of the invoice value, depending on how it works, and whether you use invoice finance or a factoring facility. If you're starting to want to ask questions about that, you need to pick up with me offline, because we're starting to get into factoring. And that's where you want to try and stop general discussion in this way. We'll also do 100% asset concentration, which is quite a rare one. So if you just tend to invoice to one single client, quite a lot of providers won't entertain that because they won't want single point concentration. We're happy to accept that, and we do provide facilities in the last few months where they've just been single debtor. Again, it all depends. We're also the only mainstream lender that will look at the construction industry. So that's absolutely a sweet spot of ours, and one that we're really keen to support, the construction industry. Lastly and finally is we'll also provide you with a debtor protection should that be the right thing for you. You don't have to take it, but some customers do like to go with a debt protection policy that runs alongside that. Again, really, really strong way of working for you. So, coming full turn all the way back, don't just consider term debt as the way forward. Don't just consider your bank as one point. We have boots on the floor here at Lloyds. So I've got 10 colleagues that are out on the shop floor every single day, out with clients, out with customers, both new and existing clients, looking to provide this support in. We're absolutely a UK-focused bank, and we're really, really looking to try and support you all the way through. So just before I finish, I've kind of anticipated that one of the Q&A bits is going to be around Brexit, because it always is. Just thought it was worth, again, sharing with you that we do, obviously in these turbulent times, we do provide a Market Matters conference call. The next one's on the 8th of November. Who knows by then? But these, you don't have to be a Lloyds client to register for it. Again, if you're interested, drop me a note afterwards. I'll happily send you through the details. This will be an economic update. These people that will be on this call will be able to provide a really good understanding on Article 50 and exactly what's going on at that particular time. They'll run you all through it. They're on at least every month. We also pulse them, so depending on what's going on in the market, we can pulse them. We also do, you can sign up again on our website. You don't have to be a Lloyds client again. We'd love you to be, but you don't have to be a Lloyds client. We provide daily updates on this and on all parts of the financial market. So if you want to know about the dollar, the euro, if you want to know about fixed rates, if you want to know what's going on forward, that's all there for you. So again, I can get you registered. So thanks for listening. Been really great to come along and meet you. Always an absolute pleasure to work alongside So Legal and all of the colleagues there. So any, hopefully, simple questions that I can pass to either Elliot or Colin? Hopefully. Brilliant. I'll hand back, allow me to do so. Thanks very much.
First thing I can say, actually, I do all my lending through Lloyds. They're brilliant. They get back to you, they're quick, they're responsive. So, yeah, they're fantastic to work with. Thanks, everyone. Has anyone got any questions at all? We can have another cup of tea if you want, but if you have any then. But if anyone wants to ask anything now, based on anything that we've discussed... Brilliant. Okay, so now I pronounce you free and happy to go home. So, no, brilliant. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I'll send details of the next one in a couple of months when we've got the idea for what it's going to be.
Hello, you lovely people. Just to note that this is a podcast and does not constitute legal advice. Should you require any specific legal advice based on anything, then please contact your solicitor, or even better, us, and we can advise you fully.